e-cigarettes and your kid. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. And just ahead, why a new report says too many Florida teens are smoking and vaping. Is one of them yours? Get on the line now and join us at 549-2937. Then later, Groundwork Jacksonville is cleaning up McCoy's Creek and greening up the city's urban core. We'll tell you about it in today's Going Green. Plus, local students are remembering three American space tragedies that all happened this week. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, kids and cigarettes. A new report says Florida gets a failing grade on its efforts to reduce teen smoking and vaping. Now, tobacco use, of course, is this nation's leading cause of preventable death and disease. This year's State of Tobacco Control report calls on Florida to enact provisions of Constitutional Amendment 9 that was approved last year by the voters. Amendment 9 would save lives by expanding smoke-free protections to include the use of e-cigarettes, vaping. Now, let's talk about that for a minute. Youth e-cigarette use, it is now at epidemic levels across the country and in Florida. There's been a 78% increase in high school e-cigarette use just over the last year. That equals 1 million additional kids now taking up e-cigarettes. So what do you think about this? Well, we're going to get into the numbers and more as we welcome Crystal Fuentes, Health Promotion Specialist with the American Lung Association. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having.
Ange Apollo, she's Vice Chair of Tobacco-Free Jacksonville and Health and Safety Chair of the Duval County Council PTA. Hi, Ann.
Good morning.
And joining us by phone, Ashley Lyerly. She's Director of Advocacy with the American Lung Association. Good to have you, Ashley.
Thank you. Good morning.
And here's our question to callers. How concerned are you about teen smoking, particularly vaping, e-cigarettes? What are your concerns and questions about that? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Weigh in on Facebook as well. Ashley Lyerly, let's begin with you. Give us the download on the numbers. What is the new report from the American Lung Association finding when it comes to the rate of teens smoking and more recently vaping?
So the annual American Lung Association State of Tobacco Control Report really looks and shows the progress and the failures not only of the states and the federal government to prevent and reduce tobacco use. The report grades states in five key areas, starting with funding for state tobacco prevention programs, strengthening of smoke-free workplace laws, the level of a state's tobacco tax, coverage and access to services to quit tobacco, and then the minimum age of sale for tobacco products to 21. And in Florida this year, unfortunately, Florida received F's. We used letter grades in all categories except for smoke-free air, which the state of Florida received a letter grade of B.
Okay, so Florida could be doing much better. Ange Apollo, let's talk about what's going on with high school kids in Duval County. When we look at these numbers, and not just Duval, but St. John's, Nassau, all of the counties listening to this program right now, what are you seeing in the schools?
Well, anecdotally, if you have a high school child and ask them, anybody vaping around you at school, in the bathrooms or whatever, it's everywhere. And they apparently, the kids have these games they play. They post these videos on YouTube where they have challenges with each other when the teacher turns their back to the class to do something on a board or a smart board. The kids will vape and like hide the vapor in a sleeve of their sweatshirt or something like that and see how many of them can do it and get away with it before the teacher turns back around to look at the class. And the administrators are reporting epidemic levels of this. They're confiscating dozens of these a quarter and they, you know, keep them in drawers. You can go talk to any administrator and they'll open up a drawer and show you the dozens and dozens they've confiscated.
Wow.
From kids.
Let us know your thoughts about teens and vaping, e-cigarettes. It's 549-2937. Crystal Fuentes, these vapes, these e-cigarettes look like a little flash drive, and they're being heavily promoted. Juul is one brand
Yes.
that's really popular. So you know, just when America thought we'd finally seen some progress in reducing tobacco use among young people, it's going back up again because of this technology, which is really alarming.
It is. And I think one of the biggest reasons is it's the ease. You know, you talk about when people were smoking cigarettes, you know, a long time ago, it was hard. It hurt. Well, this is something that's very pleasant. It smells like, you know, cotton candy or vanilla. And these are pleasant, you know, things that are they're feeling. And the nicotine, it does affect their brain. And that is one of the really scariest parts of it.
Sure. There's nothing more damaging than nicotine to our health, to our brain and our lungs. So Ashley Lyerly, what is the American Lung Association recommending be done about this?
Well, certainly e-cigarettes are currently being sold across the U.S., as we can see in Florida, but they have not been reviewed by the FDA. The Food and Drug Administration, they have the ability to enforce reviewing these e-cigarettes, these products, but also enforcing youth access provisions. And unfortunately, to date, they have failed to take meaningful action in cracking down on e-cigarette companies. And we, as the Lung Association, obviously are extremely concerned with the rapid increase of youth using these products. And we'll continue to call for the FDA to increase their oversight and scrutiny of these products to protect kids. I also think from a state level policy position, we certainly want to see the legislature enact provisions related to Amendment 9, which was approved by the voters, which would essentially prohibit the use of e-cigarettes in locations and workplaces and public places that are currently prohibited from smoking those as part of the Florida's Clean Indoor Air Law.
Will you be making noise about this when the state legislature convenes in March in Tallahassee?
We will be. We will be advocating that the legislature to enact Constitutional Amendment 9 and to add e-cigarettes to the Florida's Clean Indoor Air Law.
All right, let's go to your calls now about this. It's 549-2937. Give us a call. Marcel is on the south side. Hi, Marcel. Good morning to you.
Hi, good morning. I'm a little conflicted about e-cigarettes because 10 years ago I was able to use them to get off of smoking, and I've been smoke-free since. But at the same time, I do have a nephew that smokes e-cigarettes, and I do have a friend that has a daughter that smokes e-cigarettes. And I just see it as a pathway to, you know, either smoking or, you know, doing harder drugs down the road. And I see the benefits of it, you know, being as I was able to use them. But when I was using them, they were pretty disgusting, and so it kind of weaned me off of smoking regular cigarettes.
Huh.
Although nowadays, I just see, like, if there were all these fruity flavors and all that stuff, it just makes it more enticing.
Yeah. Thanks, Marcel. Okay, so, Angie Paulo, some adults are using e-cigarettes to quit, but the concern is that young people will start on e-cigarettes and graduate to real cigarettes.
Yes, and there is a significant percentage of kids who will move on to regular cigarettes. If the statistics we have now show that 47% of children have tried either regular burning tobacco or e-cigs, and 33% experience secondhand smoke as well. So, and the chemicals that are in it, they've been able to document about 49 chemicals in the vape liquids, and 20 of those are known carcinogens, things like benzene and lead and things like that. So kids are under the impression that these are safer than cigarettes. Well, you know, what our message to them is safer is not safe, and there, because there's nicotine in it, and there are no pods manufactured at this time that don't have nicotine in them, the kids think that they're safer, but they're not safe. And there is the nicotine in there. They're so easy to use because there isn't that burning sensation like Krista was talking about. So,
and it seems like a toy.
Yes.
And it's something they, as you said, it's something they can hide.
It's cool.
Which is appealing to them. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's secretive.
Yes.
They can get away with something.
Right. So but the nicotine that it's so addictive. There was a video story on NBC News a couple weeks ago about a high school kid who was a straight A kid. I think he played football. He was a Eagle Scout. And in a quarter or a semester, he went from straight A to all Fs, withdrew, depressed, tried to quit on his own without letting his parents know that he was addicted, and couldn't do it, and then was getting more depressed, more frustrated, finally got his parents involved. They took him to the doctor and said, okay, where do we send our son for a treatment program? How do we help him quit? There is no inpatient or outpatient type therapy to help teens under 18 quit, because the in-person groups, you have to be over 18 to go. Now, the Florida has online and talk 1-800 numbers that kids can call into and do, but they can't go anywhere into any kind of group therapy right now unless they're over 18.
Lots of calls about this, as the American Lung Association report out this morning finds that teen vaping in this country and in Florida is at epidemic levels. The U.S. Surgeon General has called this an epidemic, a public health emergency. What are your thoughts? It's 549-2937. Grant is in St. Augustine. Hi, Grant. How are you?
Hi. Good. How are you?
Okay, go ahead.
Hey, I used to be a smoker and a vapor, and I found it much harder to quit vaping than smoking cigarettes because of, like you touched on, how easy and smooth it is to smoke, the different flavors and whatnot that you have. I'm curious as to if there's action and some sort of law or ban on the flavors that are openly sold in stores, if that would maybe help cut back on younger kids smoking.
Okay. Yeah. What about that, Crystal Fuentes? And also, how can, as Ann just said, there really aren't programs for kids under 18. What about all this?
Yes, the flavors are completely targeting our youth, as well as, you know, other people that enjoy that as well. And the FDA can really do more. If you remember years ago, they took away Joe Camel because Joe Camel was a cartoon character that was targeting our youth. These are the same things that are, again, targeting our youth. They know that the tobacco industry knows that their tobacco, their cigarette smokers, they're dying. You know, that is their money makers, and they have to figure out a new way to entice more people and a new product.
And it looks like they found
they
it.
They did. And the nicotine amounts in these pods are, you know, one Juul pod is a whole pack of cigarettes. So you're getting a lot of nicotine, and that is, it's highly addictive. It's as addictive as heroin.
So Ashley Lyerly on the line with us, why hasn't the government cracked down on Juul and these other products the way they cracked down on Joe Camel or products that were marketed to teens, nicotine products that used to be marketed to minors in decades past?
You know, I think some of it has to do with, you know, timing and pressure. I mean, certainly from the public health advocates and public health agencies, we have been talking about this and been extremely troubled and continue to call on the FDA to exert their authority, not only to enforce youth access provisions, meaning, you know, making sure that e-cigarette manufacturers aren't intentionally marketing these tobacco products to kids, but also on the quit smoking side of things, cracking down on the companies for making these quit smoking claims. We know that no e-cigarette has been found to be safe and effective in helping smokers quit. And so quitting means ending your addiction to nicotine. And as we've talked about today, you know, there have been no pods out there that have shown no traces of nicotine. And so we want to make sure that people are not only quitting traditional cigarettes, but quitting e-cigarettes as well.
Sure. We pulled some statistics, Anne, from the Florida Health Department, looking at Duval County kids aged 11 to 17. This is over the past 6 years. The percentage of kids who have tried cigarettes has gone down by about 10%. However, the percentage of kids who've tried vaping has gone way up from about 3% to 26% over the last 6 years. So in Duval, we're seeing a big spike, according to the health department,
right,
which bears out what you see in the schools.
Yes.
Yeah. So the numbers do show that. Okay. It's 549-2937 to join us. Brett is in Riverside. Hi, Brett. Good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So I want to clear up a couple of misconceptions that I've heard spoken about this morning. First of all, over 99% of what's in vaping juice is either propylene glycol or vegetable glycerin. And the propylene glycol is mostly used as a suspension agent for the flavorings. The flavorings themselves are the only ones that are going to have a variance in the number of chemicals. And the majority of chemicals that you find are going to be coming in cheap vape juices that come from outside of the United States. The nicotine levels are based on personal choice. And they can run from very low at 3% all the way up to 50%, depending on the type of nicotine and the type of device you're using.
And well, that's all true, Brett, but hang on a minute. Okay. Even if there's zero nicotine in a vape, some of the juice flavorings are also bad for your heart. And that's according to the American Heart Association's study that was published in January, finding that vape juice flavorings can impair blood vessel function. I think it's not a good thing to talk about vaping as something that's safe and harmless. We're not going to entertain that on this program. Okay. We're just not going to entertain that.
I'm not saying that it's harmless, but it depends on the juice that you get. And there's an NIH study on different juices and what can become a lung irritant, et cetera. And if you use natural products rather than products that are artificial for flavoring, there's far less problem. There is not a zero harm, but also it was said that there are no pods that are no nicotine, and that's also untrue. Now, the Juuls and the ones that are commonly sold in like bodegas and gas stations and whatnot, those do not come in any available no nicotine packaging, but the rest of it is completely up to the user as to what.
Let's get Crystal to respond to that. That's Brett in Riverside. Crystal.
Correct. The Juul pods are the only ones that have there's no, you know, it's 5% nicotine. That's the brand that I was speaking of. But there are, like you were saying, you can have the 0% nicotine and it can go up to 5 even more percent. But the bottom line is that anytime you put anything besides clean air into your lungs, whether it's tobacco smoke, whether it's these chemicals in e-cigarettes, even pollution, it is not healthy for you. So that is really the bottom line, is that it's not healthy. There are many, many chemicals in there and we don't know what they are. You know, when you go to a grocery store and you pick up something to eat, you have nutrition facts there. You have ingredients. The FDA does not regulate anything that's in those e-cigarettes. We have no idea what we are putting into our bodies.
Okay, let me go ahead, Ann.
Students are under the impression, because it's called vaping, that it's a water vapor because it goes down cool on the throat. But it's not a vapor, a water vapor. It's an aerosol. And there are more than 50 chemicals in these products, in the juices, and more than 20 of them are cancer-causing agents.
Let me ask you, Ashley Lyerly, in this state now where medical marijuana is legal and there's going to be a push to fully legalize recreational marijuana, and we have a governor, a very conservative governor, by the way, who said, I'm fine with cancer patients or other people smoking marijuana to treat what ails them. You know, does that muddy the waters a little bit when it comes to the message you're trying to send and this panel is trying to send, which is that anytime you inhale something into your lungs, as Crystal just said, that's not good for your lungs?
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, the American Lung Association believes that, you know, all smoke-free workplace laws should apply to smoking or vaping marijuana. We believe that it should be eliminated in all public places and workplaces. The Lung Association does have more information about, you know, the impact of lung health and marijuana on our website, but certainly any burning product that you're going to be ingesting into your lungs is not going to be healthy.
Right. And so when people smoke cannabis, marijuana, they can relieve their nausea from chemo. It can help in a lot of ways. But It can also cause lung damage. There's a downside to that as well.
Yes.
So just wanted to mention that. But we'll get back to the main topic here. Lots of calls on vaping and teens as we go through the numbers of this new American Lung Association report, giving Florida a failing grade on efforts to reduce teen vaping and smoking. 549-2937. Annette is in Fleming Island. Hi, Annette. How are you?
Hi, Melissa. I just wanted to make one comment, not a health comment, but the fact that I believe that the government does not do so much of a crackdown on the tobacco industry because of the revenue that it does bring into the federal government in form of taxes and so forth, all the way down the line from manufacturing to retail. So I believe that's a big issue there with what the government will do to control this.
You think the government's reluctant to crack down just because of all the money that's being made on this product?
Not just because, but I do believe that that is a major factor, considering that it really is not addressed when they talk about controlling the tobacco industry. You very rarely hear that discussed, but I believe it is a big factor. And I do not have figures on the amount of revenue it brings into the federal coffers, but I do know that it is a lot of revenue for the government. And certainly that must come into play when they consider what they're going to control.
Ashley Lyerly, certainly the government was slow to crack down on big tobacco in terms of establishing that nicotine is addictive and harmful. But as you said, it sounds more like what you think is that it's just the slow-moving government bureaucracy that hasn't caught up to this issue yet. Is that your feeling or no?
Yeah, well, yes, but I do believe there is some, you know, some validity to the pressure from the tobacco industry that they have, not only federally but also at the state level. Their investment in marketing tactics and just general pressure that they, you know, that they're showing in trying to delay and prohibit, you know, all products, tobacco products, from being regulated. But certainly, I think there have been for many years public health agencies, not only from way back when with, you know, traditional tobacco products were needing to be regulated by the FDA, but also now with e-cigarettes and other tobacco products that are in the pipeline by the industry that are looking to continue to get people addicted not only to traditional tobacco products, but also to e-cigarettes and to other smokeless products or even these heat-not-burn products that are becoming on the market now.
E-cigarettes now the most commonly used tobacco product among minors as we continue talking about this report. And we're getting lots of emails and tweets about this, sort of pushing back on everything you guys are saying. Here's one from Lena. No one seems to notice or check to see if the kids are even using nicotine in their vape liquids. You can get 0% nicotine vape liquids in delicious flavors. I used vaping to quit smoking, and I've been tobacco-free for several years. Let the kids vape as long as it's 0% nicotine. Okay, that's from Lena. Here's another tweet for you. In the last 6 years or so, since the wife and I have been vaping and trying to quit burning tobacco, the main ingredients in e-cigarettes or vape juice, as I understand it, are basically the same as that found in a chemical fog machine at a dance club. Okay, so people basically saying to the show now, if vaping helps us quit smoking, why not just be okay with that? At least that's what some people are saying here.
I am thrilled that people have quit smoking traditional cigarettes with it. That is a huge milestone. However, like again, because it is chemicals going into your body over and over again, the nicotine causes you to want more and more. It is not good for you. The chemicals in there, there is one, for example, called diacetyl. Diacetyl is known to cause something called popcorn lung. Not because, you know, it makes your lungs pop or anything like that, but diacetyl is a chemical that was known or that was used in microwave popcorn. And the factory workers, they noticed that they were getting, you know, lung issues in this factory. And so they had basically in your lungs, you have branches and there's alveoli that exchanges the oxygen. and it creates scarring in your lungs that makes it very difficult to breathe. Throughout you know, the United States, we have something called Better Breathers Clubs, and all of those members have some form of lung disease. So I go and I teach to these Better Breathers Clubs about COPD and how to live better lives with their condition. And I know for a fact that all of these Better Breathers Club members would tell everybody, quit smoking, do not start e-cigarettes, because they are living their lives on oxygen and struggling everyday activities.
All right. So Ann Giappolo with Tobacco Free Jacksonville and the Duval County PTA, what educational programs are going on now in our local schools to try to make kids more aware that they really don't need to be going down this road?
I have one child at Mandarin High School who's a senior, and she missed an assembly a couple weeks ago, and she found out later on that it was about vaping products. I called yesterday to see if they could tell me where do they get the information they used for that, et cetera, but no one has called me back yet. But Tobacco Free Jacks has health educators. We have a coordinator for SWAT clubs, which are students working against tobacco. And the thing with e-cigarettes now, it's not just that there's been this spike in trying it and or getting addicted to it, but the ages are getting younger and younger. We have fifth and sixth graders now who are trying this. So we have educators who can come and talk about vaping to parents and tailor a program to talk to students as well. There's printed information that can be put out for kids to pick up and stuff too. And they're still in a no knowledge zone. That's the biggest problem, is they don't know there is nicotine in it. They think it is safer, as we said, than burning tobacco, cigarettes, but it's not safe. And if you ask them, why did you try it or why are you using it? About 50% say, because my friends are, you know, in a party situation or whatever, they'll try it. And then if you say their next highest percentage of responses is because it's safer than a cigarette, 25% of kids will say that. And it's not. And we're not getting enough information out to them. And without us pushing the information to them, saying it's not safe, there is nicotine in it, it is highly addictive, and it is very hard to quit. They, without information, that becomes for them tacit approval.
So basically, Tobacco-Free Jacksonville just needs to get into more schools, it sounds
yes.
like, and give more presentations.
Yes.
Well, I hope they're listening.
Yes.
And I want to make a quick mention of something with all of this said about e-cigarettes. It's about something happening this weekend at the downtown Bank of America Tower. It's the Fight for Air Climb. The American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb this Saturday, 8 a.m., February 2nd at the Bank of America Tower. Hundreds of people have signed up to climb 36 flights of stairs at that skyscraper all the way to the top. The Fight for Air Climb raises awareness and funds for healthy air and lung disease research, education, and advocacy. People climb in support of friends and loved ones that have a lung disease, most often caused by smoking. And so it's not too late to register for the Fight for Air Climb. Thank you so much, Ashley Lyerly and Crystal Fuentes with the American Lung Association and Ann Giappolo of Tobacco Free Jacksonville, for spreading the word on this program. We appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And still ahead, marking three American space tragedies that all happened this week in history. But up next, greening up downtown Jacksonville by cleaning up McCoy's Creek. This is First Coast Connect. We'll be right back.
Just breathe. Just believe. Just breathe. Lying in my bed. Another day. Thank you.
I'm Jessica Palumbo. Every Thursday, I host The Jackson on WJCT.
We actually have some pretty great public spaces here in Jacksonville.
Jacksonville is still trying to wrap its head around clustering.
The urban core was Jacksonville's original city limits before consolidation in 1968.
Tomorrow during Morning Edition, here on 89.9.
Support for The Jackson on WJCT comes from the Jacksonville Police and Fire Pension Fund.
Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup, where we talk about the biggest stories in the state.
From politics to education, the environment, and more. If it's news in Florida, we want to hear from you.
Let your voice be heard. Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Fridays at noon on WJCT.
This Going Green segment is made possible by A1A Solar.
Welcome back. Well, it's a big step forward for restoring downtown McCoy's Creek and bringing a green solution to Jacksonville's urban environmental issues. The local nonprofit Groundwork Jacksonville has been awarded a $250,000 grant. It comes from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation and NOAA, and it's all going to be used to restore McCoy's Creek, getting the creek back to a natural channel design, preventing flooding, improving the water quality, even creating habitat for wildlife. Kate Ehouse is the CEO of Groundwork Jacksonville. She's here now with more in our Going Green. Hey, Kay, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
All right. So for years and years now, we've been hearing about the need to clean up McCoy's Creek in downtown Jacksonville. It sounds as though with this grant, we may actually see it happen. How did this all come about for you guys?
So the McCoy's Creek project is really championed by Councilwoman Boyer and the mayor's office. So the mayor and the council have approved up to $60 million over the next 3 years to actually implement the project, mm-hmm. not just design it. And we were invited to help with the design. So that's what we've been working on, and our approach is natural channel design, like you mentioned. And we're working really closely with the city because we're about to, within the next week, deliver that 30% design.
Okay. So tell me what it will do. Paint a picture for us. What does it look like now, and what's it going to look
like? So what it looks like now is a very unkept, dirty creek that is inaccessible for the most part. It's bulkheaded, some of the bulkheads failing. It was straightened years ago in the late 20s. And so envision that bulkhead being removed, the creek boundaries being expanded in terms of reclaiming the floodplain. You know, that's why it floods all the time, because the floodplain was filled in.
Mm-hmm.
So we're proposing three different stream types throughout the water body based on the topography. It will be more accessible for people to play in, to kayak in, to fish in. And it'll be aesthetically so much more pleasing and more resilient long term.
Right. Now, the idea of reducing flooding on nearby roads and to homes and businesses is mm-hmm. important. But the bigger picture is that this is part of what's always been called the Emerald Necklace. Can you explain a little bit about the Emerald Necklace in the city's urban core and how this will help restore that that green belt around the city?
Yeah, so that was envisioned in the late 1990s by the architect Henry Clutho. It involved the River Hogan's and McCoy's Creeks. So what will be there when both those creeks are restored and as part of the McCoy's project is a bike ped trail, which will connect to, it'll be 30 miles when it's done. So it's a little bit more expansive than what was originally envisioned as the Emerald Necklace, but it will connect to directly to over 20 schools and 20 parks, and 20 more schools and parks will be within three blocks of that trail. So it will be incredibly important to revitalize the urban core in downtown, we believe.
Okay, and there's something else that's tied to this. It's the Sugar Hill Mosaic. What is the Sugar Hill Mosaic?
So the Sugar Hill Mosaic is going to be a 117-foot-long tile mosaic that will be placed underneath a 95 overpass along the S-Line rail trail. And it was designed by and created by the community, in partnership with Rue Art. So it will be Jacksonville's largest mosaic when installed in March.
So you guys are working on a lot of things, not just the creek, but other things. The S-Line Rail Trail is an exciting project, too. That is a walking trail basically through the city that people can use. We've done several segments on this, but can you explain again what it is and where it is?
So the S-Line Rail Trail was an abandoned CSX rail line that the city acquired and created a bike ped trail. And it ends right now at Union and Myrtle, which is considered part of the rail yard district now, and goes up to, I think, Gate Shopping Center.
All the way up to Gateway.
Yeah, but now it has some disconnects in there. And the Emerald Trail Plan will connect, will make those connections, and will, so our Model Mile Project starts where the S-Line ends at Union and Myrtle, and then goes through La Villa, up over the Park Street Viaduct, and will connect with the McCoy's Creek Trail segment.
So all of these projects together that Groundwork Jacksonville is working on are basically greening up the urban core. That's the goal, isn't it?
It's greening up the urban core, bringing nature back to people, but also creating transportation modes, right? So you don't need a car if you live in these neighborhoods and want to get downtown.
So you're saying people can just walk?
Or bike.
Or bike on the bike trails. It's just, it's something that you've been working on for several years. And so I'm glad to have you back on the show again today to show that there's actual progress. This is moving forward.
It is moving forward.
Which is exciting. And let's talk about the fact, too, that you got this national grant, which is one of, let me see here. It's one of 35 awarded all over 22 states and Puerto Rico, nearly $30 million awarded to advance nature-based approaches, and I'm quoting here, nature-based approaches to improve the resilience of coastal communities. That is so important for Jacksonville and our First Coast. Can you talk a little bit more about how Groundwork Jacksonville is working on resiliency issues for this area?
So natural channel design is a more resilient approach because you're using nature and green infrastructure that will grow stronger over time. So there's less maintenance required long term. The system grows stronger over time, can withstand, you know, weather events much more than what's currently there now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're in some cases our design, again, we're presenting it to the city in about a week for them to review it before we finalize it. But in some cases we're reducing flooding by 3 feet.
That's important considering what a concern flooding has become for this region.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What are some other solutions, some other approaches you think the city should be taking to become more resilient as you've worked through these issues?
So in my ideal world, Groundwork would have $500,000 to do a watershed plan for both McCoy's and Hogan's Creeks, because a detailed watershed plan tells you what natural remedies to put where to accomplish what you're trying to accomplish, whether it's water quality or stormwater. That to me would be a huge step to start really doing green infrastructure throughout our watersheds.
Why is that important to do? Explain the consequences of not working on
that. Well, I think we're going to have more and more severe storm events. And so that means more flooding. And if you can make your watershed more resilient to that, right, by adding ways to soak up that water or to clean up that water before it gets into the main water body. So that would involve, you know, going to a private company that has a huge parking lot and saying, let us add some green infrastructure here, or looking where it's running off and dealing with that.
What is green infrastructure?
It's really natural solutions to stormwater management. So whether it's a bioswale or a rain garden or, you know, there's many different things. Green roofs.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things.
Yeah.
Groundwork Jacksonville is one of only 20 groundwork trusts in the entire United States, we need to point out. So we have this really leading edge organization working on these issues. But as a city, I don't think we're really out in front of these issues.
We're not, but I want to give the city credit for taking this approach for McCoy's Creek, right? Because it's a new approach for the city to look at doing it in a natural, resilient way. And I think, I feel like McCoy's Creek will be a showcase for that and a learning lab for that, that the city can then apply in other areas.
Okay.
Because they have announced where they want to look at resiliency for the other water bodies that are not Hogan's or McCoy's recently.
Yeah. Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
Certainly after Hurricane Irma, I think that was a wake-up call for so many people.
Absolutely.
Our river-hugging neighborhoods are extremely vulnerable.
Absolutely. So as you're doing new development, that needs to be taken into consideration.
So far, it doesn't seem to be. So do we need changes in building codes? Do we need changes in zoning laws?
Potentially. We at least need every development that's near a water body to have incorporated into it how it's going to be resilient.
Yeah. That to me seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
You know, so is it a matter of just... are we going to have to get pounded by five more storms before we wake up and do something?
I hope not.
Me too. You know, I will never forget being in this building when the St. John's River crested after Hurricane Irma. And we just looked out the window all day long and watched the water coming closer and closer to this building. And so, and it eventually surrounded this building. And it spread all the way across Bay Street and surrounded the football stadium. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not something you ever forget.
No. And again, if you remember the Times Union article about how the Army Corps changed the river and it brought the ocean closer to us.
Right. Yeah. So there are
maybe
lots.
We could get them to undo that.
Well, in the meantime, we do have your work on McCoy's Creek. So again, you're presenting this to the city next week. And then in March, something else is happening.
March is the dedication of the mosaic.
Okay. So that's a little ways off.
Yeah.
All right. But so much happening. You can learn more at groundworkjacksonville.org as they are awarded a grant to clean up McCoy's Creek, and millions of dollars is actually committed to this project. If you drive around downtown or through Springfield, you'll see what we're talking about. This is so important for the urban core. So Kay Ehas, the CEO of Groundwork Jacks, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And in a moment, why space buffs call this week Hell Week. Yeah. The tragic anniversaries of three American space disasters, marking those in local classrooms. That's after this.
The next Fresh Air, composer Nicholas Britell. His score for If Beale Street Could Talk is nominated for an Oscar. He also composed the score for Vice, which is nominated for Best Picture. Britell scored the films Moonlight and The Big Short, composed the theme for HBO's series Succession, and for 12 Years a Slave, he wrote spirituals and work songs. Join us. Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
For millions of Venezuelans, economic conditions have made the country unlivable.
Mi sueldo es el equivalente a $4 al mes.
My wages were the equivalent of $4 per month.
As opposition leader Juan Guaido declares himself president, can he make conditions better? That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Scientists are collecting better data about our changing climate. Now there's a push to use it for early warnings about dangerous floods, wildfires, even outbreaks of dengue fever.
It gives you 4 months' notice.
If you've got 4 months, think of all the things that you can do in 4 months.
I'm Ari Shapiro, using climate data to protect people from climate impacts, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
This year's State of the Union has been delayed, but is the ceremony past its expiration date? The Constitution requires this report, but not the event itself. This annual address can appeal to our highest ambitions. It can also seem like a televised catfight. The State of the Union address. End it or amend it? Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Running.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, aviation and space buffs call this week Hell Week. Yes, sadly, the tragic anniversaries of three American space disasters, Apollo 1, Challenger, and Columbia, are all being marked this week. Some are learning about the disasters in class, those too young to remember them when they happened. Thomas Weber is a science writer, an AP physics instructor, and head of science at Oak Leaf High School in the Clay County School District. He's on the line now with more about Hell Week for space. Hey, Tom, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you. You know, I so remember the Challenger disaster. I remember exactly where I was and what I was doing. I think most people do that are old enough. But I didn't realize that Apollo 1 and Columbia, those anniversaries are also being marked this week. Kind of an unfortunate confluence of disasters all this week.
It is a remarkable coincidence, but if you were to just take a calendar and put a pin on just the days that they happened, they all happen within a week of each other, even though there are decades that separate the actual events.
Sure. Okay, so what are you teaching your students about Apollo 1, Challenger, and Columbia?
Well, I think these students may have heard, or they've certainly seen on the internet, but they've never had a formal introduction, even to the space program. And particularly being in Florida, which is part of our national history, all these things happened, with the exception of Columbia, which launched from here. This is all Florida history. So we take some time to learn about the spacecraft themselves. I have models that I can take apart and show them. We've all seen the iconic Saturn rocket. We've all seen the space shuttle. But what did what? What was the big orange tank? What was the purpose of this, that, and the other? And they are enthralled to learn about those things, and it allows me to show them what happened. We learn about these disasters individually on the days. I'll be talking with them about Columbia this Friday. We look at what happened afterwards, the aftermath, the research. We watch the president's address to the nation, and then I have them quietly read the memorials that are at NASA in Arlington and have them reflect. What do they feel? Are they angry? Are they scared? Are they indifferent? There's no right or wrong answer, but I want them to walk out of the classroom a little bit different than they walked in after learning these things.
Absolutely, and I'm sure they will learn a lot. You know so much about this. And, you know, they all had different circumstances that led to the loss of life. Apollo 1 happened, I think, on the launch pad before it even took off back in 1967.
It was a very freak accident. It was just during a training exercise. The astronauts died very quickly. They knew it was happening, but it happened in under 10 seconds. And the students always ask those questions. But that was, they hadn't even launched yet. It was just a training exercise. There was a series of events went wrong. And we learned from them and corrected the problems in later designs.
And then with Challenger, of course, it broke off just after liftoff. With Columbia, it disintegrated when it was coming home.
Coming home.
Yeah. And so, as you mentioned, with NASA being based here in Florida and private space flight becoming a going concern, particularly a spaceport that's planned for the Cecil Commerce Center on Jacksonville's west side. We're going to see more space travel, but it's most likely not going to be government-sponsored space travel. What do you think is important for private industry to try to learn from these disasters?
Well, I think the first thing I tell the students, and I would hope maybe the public would realize, is that the reality of space travel is not what we're seeing in movies and entertainment. These craft are subject to environmental conditions and space conditions and things we can't even anticipate. So even though these things might be becoming familiar, oh, we've been to the moon, we've launched satellites, let's not forget the bravery of the people that are sitting on top of these things and going into space. You know, the automobile has been around for more than a century, and yet we still have accidents every day. We try to learn and improve the safety. It's going to be a learning process, but it's inevitable. Our future does lie in space.
And if you had the chance to go up into space, would you do it?
Me, personally, I don't even like being this tall, Melissa.
So you're not going to be like Lance Bass and plunk down a bunch of money to be one of the first civilians to go into space?
Well, right now I'm on a teacher's salary. I don't even think I can put that together. But I will enjoy watching the younger generation take over our space exploration.
He's Tom Weber, teaches science and physics at Oak Leaf High School in Clay County as we mark the anniversaries of Apollo 1, Challenger, and Columbia all this week. Tom, always good to speak with you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. And if you missed anything this morning, catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 p.m. If you're listening to that replay, keep listening for the Electro Lounge. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for being with First Coast Connect. 1A is up next, and we'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.